Well, good morning again, everybody. I was kind of thinking, and I don't know what it says about me if this lesson tanks and is horrible and the one I wasn't prepared for is actually good. So, just a silly thought I had. I meant to mention this last week when we had the last Revelation lesson, but for those who are interested in getting it on CD, if you know how to use MP3s, I can put it all on one disc for you, and it costs you like 50 cents. But if you don't, and you need it so you can put it in a CD player, you don't know what MP3s are, it's probably, if you give me about $5, that's what it's going to cost me. It's going to probably be about 20 CDs, and it costs like 10 bucks for 40 CDs or something like that. So if you're interested, let me know, and as time allows, in the coming weeks, my plan is to go back through and put all my notes down. So if you want my notes on that, let me know, and once I get them together, I will give them to you. I can't promise you it'll be anytime soon, but I will do my best to do so. So, all right. The Bible has a whole lot of books in it. I think 66. That's what I have written down, but I always forget the number. Megan's thinking, is that right, 66?
Yeah.
Okay, 66. She used to teach the kids, so I know they usually teach them that. Yes, I've been through preaching school, and I still can't remember how many books are in the Bible. but anyway, it's got a whole lot of books in it. And I dare say that most people, at least this day and age, probably haven't read a book, just for their own entertainment, that's as thick as the Bible is. My Bible is about 1,000 pages, a little longer than 1,000 pages, but it's also double columned. So if it were single columned, you double that 2,000 pages. Most people have never sat down just to read some other book and, you know, read through it. So it can become difficult for us, I think, sometimes to study the Bible, to figure it out, especially if we're using some of the more trusted versions, because some of the better translations oftentimes are older translations. Like the King James. You've got archaic words in it like whist and what. And, they add EST on the back of just about everything and ETH on the back of it. And it can become difficult for us because it's not in our modern language. Some other things that make it difficult are the spellings. You'll see magic, I believe, in the King James is spelled M-A-G-I-C-K, which is a little bit different. Got some older spellings, and sometimes we don't, you'd see magic, you'd know what that is. Sometimes you run into the genealogies. Oh, everyone's favorite thing. A full chapter of a list of about 50 people who were born, and they had this fella, that was his son, and he lived this long, and then he died, and this guy came along, and he had a son, and he lived this long, and he died, and I think some people hit the genealogies, and they go, I'm done. I say, what worth can this possibly be to me? How does this relate to Jesus? How is this going to help me get to heaven? Well, I think all these things combined, a whole lot of other things, sometimes can intimidate us from studying the Bible properly. I think sometimes it can keep us from opening it up, but I think as well, it can keep us from understanding how it does relate to us. Because believe it or not, all the genealogies in the Bible do have something to do with us. Doesn't mean we need to memorize them. But they do have something to do with us. If God saw it fit to put them down, that means they're pretty important, right? At least they were important for someone at some time in history. I think another problem with studying the Bible, because I've known a lot of people that have been members of the church for years, who have studied their Bibles for years, and yet you can still ask them some very basic questions. Can't answer. And that's not because of a lack of study or effort or diligence on their part. I'm convinced the problem is that many times we become experts at the finite. Maybe there's that one chapter in 1 Corinthians that we really understand. So we study that a lot. We think about that a lot. Or there's that one section over there in Isaiah or Jeremiah or something like that. Or some of the old Testament stories are a little easier to pick up on because it's just a narrative in history. And so we get so accustomed to those and we become experts at those that we kind of fail to see the big picture at hand. Turn to Galatians chapter 3. Because you see, I imagine the Bible, this was actually brought up to me, and I think it's a great illustration. And ever since then, I have seen it this way. Imagine the Bible as a jigsaw puzzle. Think about the Bible as a, 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 piece jigsaw puzzle. Just this ridiculously immense jigsaw puzzle. Well, how do we begin, generally speaking, when we put a jigsaw puzzle together? Do we try and start with the middle? Do we try and put some pieces together and then figure out where do we go? We start with the edges, don't we? Most people. Generally, that's the wisest thing to do. Some people like to make it a little more difficult, but if we're going to make it easy on ourselves, aside from looking at the box and going, ooh, I can see that thing and all the color, it's only purple pieces, so we kind of put that together here. We don't put the edge together, but you know what happens if you don't put the edge together? It can be difficult to figure out where things go and how far you need to spread them apart. And until you have the border, you might have them, 3 or 4 inches too far from one another. But you get that border and you go, oh, I see. I kind of get where it is. In my mind, studying the Bible and becoming experts at small things instead of the big things, it's like trying to put a jigsaw puzzle together, a 50,000-piece jigsaw puzzle, and trying to put little splotches together here and there and have success instead of starting with the border. You see, in Galatians chapter 3, beginning in verse 19, the writer says, Wherefore then serveth the law? Or that is, what purpose is the law? He's talking about the Old Testament law. He says, it was added because of transgressions till the seed should come to whom the promise was made, and it was ordained by angels in the hand of a mediator. Now a mediator is not a mediator of one, but God is one. Is the law then against the promises of God? God forbid. For if there had been a law given which could have given life, verily righteousness should have been made by the law. But the Scripture hath concluded, all under sin, that the promise by faith of Jesus Christ might be given to them that believe. He's talking to the Jews here, and he says, don't get me wrong. He says, I'm not saying that the Old Testament law, that the law of Moses isn't effective, that it had no purpose. He says, but the purpose of the law was Christ. And the law could not perfect our salvation, but Christ perfects our salvation. Anthony, what does this have to do with your jigsaw puzzle illustration? Think of the Bible when we're studying like that gigantic jigsaw puzzle. And think of the cross being in the middle. And every piece that is built out from the center, everything surrounds the cross. It's all about the cross. The entirety of the Bible is all about Jesus. That's what the whole thing's about. So if someone gives us a jigsaw puzzle, and they've already got the border done, and they already have some of the middle done, that makes it a lot easier. Because not only can you build from the edges out, you can build from the edges in. Makes it a little bit simpler to know where you're headed with things and how things fit where they are. See, it's like this with the Bible. And the edges in the illustration is our ability to understand. They are our ability to understand the Bible in broad. The Bible as a whole. Someone says, what's the book of Genesis about? We say, well, I can tell you what's in the book of Genesis. You say, no. What is it about? I mean, what's the main point? Well, I don't know. See, we've missed the edges on Genesis, if that's our answer. For example, a lot of times we're very familiar with the parables of Jesus. Just for sake of illustration, the parable of the wheat and the tares. Go there and we study the parable by itself, and we get the meaning from it, and we call it a day. Question. Is that parable the only thing in that book? No. That parable has other things around it. There was a reason in the narrative that Jesus gave that parable. So when we go to a parable or anywhere in the Bible, if we read a section and we understand it, can we really get the broader meaning and really understand why it's there if we don't look at what's surrounding it? Often with the parables, we tend to miss that because you can put them by themselves and say, here's the parable, here's this great lesson from the parable. But why did Jesus at that moment in time decide to tell that parable? Ah, you see, that's very important. And how does that parable relate not only to the things around it immediately in the chapter, but how does that chapter relate to the rest of the book? See, quite often, we become so accustomed. Someone says, tell me about salvation. Tell me about baptism. What do you believe about baptism? What do you believe the Bible says? And we say, well, there's Acts 2:38, there's Mark 16, 15, and 16, there's Romans chapter 6, and we go on, and usually we quote a verse or two. Question. Did God just write that verse or two? No, absolutely not. It's surrounded by other words. See, I can get some of the meaning from something if I look at a singular sentence. And I fear that sometimes when we are trying to understand the Bible and put this jigsaw puzzle together, we start staring at a single piece. We kind of ignore the rest of the puzzle. But if we can understand that sentence, the question is, why does that sentence in the paragraph it's in, and how does it fit? Then once we understand that paragraph, how does that paragraph fit in that chapter? And how does that chapter relate to the rest of that book? And how does that book relate to the rest of the Bible? I have talked to people, and I have asked them concerning certain things in certain places in the Bible. I have said, I understand that you understand what's being said there, but how does that relate to the rest of the chapter? And they look at me with a blank stare, as if, what? What do you mean, how does it relate to the rest of the chapter? You see, too often, we get used to studying that one thing we know. We never look at the broader picture. And when we're asked about it, some people have trained their minds so much so that they don't even comprehend how to fit something into the broader picture. If we can't fit it into the broader picture, we're missing what God has in store for us. Because like I said with Hebrews this morning, the whole point of Hebrews is Jesus is better. You read through every single chapter, you're going to conclude that Jesus is better. It's what the writer is attempting to get across. Revelation, what's he trying to get across? Victory through overcoming. That's the whole point. Victory through overcoming. See, when we don't step back and take a look at the whole picture, we miss the first thing that God intended us to get. God does not intend us to go into a study of one of the books of the Bible and immediately start digging on the Greek and the verb tenses. That's not where He wants us to go. There may be a thing or two along the way that we don't know what it means. You know, in our study in Revelation, there were a couple times that I told y'all, I said, I don't have a clue what that means. But did that in any way keep us from understanding the picture as a whole? Nope, absolutely not. So our goal when we go to the Bible is to put the edges in place first. And the edges is getting an understanding of each book and how it relates to Jesus. And if I understand how Genesis relates to my salvation in Jesus, and I understand Exodus, and I understand the next one, and the next one, and the next one, I can much better go back and read Genesis and see the specifics involved. But when we get so caught up on the specifics, we're missing the point, and it's time to step back. It's time to see how that relates to the cross and how everything else therein goes and relates to the cross. There's nothing wrong with digging deep. There's nothing wrong with hitting a couple verses for a couple weeks. There's nothing wrong with going into the Greek or going into the Hebrew. Nothing wrong with that. But if we've done it for so long that we've trained our brains to the point where we can't even put it in the broader picture, it's time to step back, and it's time to take a look at what's being said in broad. We continue on here in Galatians. Verse 23 says, but before faith came, we were kept under the law, shut up unto the faith which should afterwards be revealed. Wherefore, the law was our schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ, that we might be justified by faith. But after that faith is come, we are no longer under a schoolmaster. For ye are all the children of God by faith in Christ Jesus. For as many of you as have been baptized into Christ have put on Christ. There is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither bond nor free, there is neither male nor female, for ye are all one in Christ Jesus. He says the law was not purposeless. So don't think that you don't have to bother with the law anymore. Don't think that it was ineffective. And here we get that point. The law was all about Jesus. It was our schoolmaster to bring us to Jesus. See, we don't need to know every book of the Bible to get to heaven. But I'll tell you something. It'll help. We will struggle and stumble in ways that we would not if we understood every book of the Bible. And again, not every individual puzzle piece, but if we understood how it fits into the border and how it relates to the cross, it's going to help us here in our journey. He says, the schoolmaster, don't ignore the old law now that it's been fulfilled, now that there is neither Jew nor Greek, bond nor free, now that anyone can be part of this and have this, don't ignore the law. Why? Well, turn to 2 Timothy. Because Paul says something to Timothy about the old law that's very powerful in 2 Timothy chapter 3. 2 Timothy chapter 3, beginning in verse 14. He says, "But continue thou in the things which thou hast learned and hast been assured of, knowing of whom thou hast learned them, and that from a child thou hast known the holy scriptures." Now remember, at this time, not much of the New Testament had been written. He's talking about the Old Testament here when he says the holy scriptures, "which are able to make thee wise unto salvation through faith, which is in Christ Jesus." Ah. So everything in the Old Testament can help make me wise unto salvation. It can have a purpose. It can help me. And like I said, yes, even the genealogies. How the genealogies? Turn to Matthew chapter 1. To give an example of how much we require an understanding of the Bible as a whole, even the Old Testament, to really understand the New Testament, in Matthew chapter 1, verse 1, it says, "The book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham." And then there's this big list, and it shows how Christ is the son of David, the son of Abraham. And in verse 17, it says, "So all the generations from Abraham to David are 14 generations, and from David until the carrying away into Babylon are 14 generations. From the carrying away into Babylon unto Christ are 14 generations." If I don't know anything about the Old Testament, it's not going to mean anything to me. Who's David? Who's Abraham? What's Babylon? Why does this matter for Jesus? Well, it matters a whole lot. Because the promised Messiah came through a certain seed line, and here Matthew is proving that Jesus was born of the family that the prophecies said that the Messiah had to come from. That's why the genealogies are important, because we can prove that Jesus is who he said he was. We go to Luke chapter 3, something very similar, from a slightly different angle. Luke chapter 3, verse 23. Luke 3 and verse 23, it says, "And Jesus himself began to be about 30 years of age, being, as was supposed, the son of Joseph, which was the son of Heli, which was the son of Mathat," and it goes on, and it goes on, and it goes on. In verse 38 it says, "which was the son of Enos, which was the son of Seth, which was the son of Adam, which was the son of God." And there in Luke he shows how Jesus' lineage goes all the way back to Adam. See, if I don't understand these things, if Matthew starts his book with genealogies, and it's assumed that I understand the Old Testament and how the borders fit in, there's a lot in Matthew I'm not going to understand. There's a lot I can understand. But you know, book of Hebrews, for example, I'll tell you what, if you don't know anything from the Old Testament, it's going to be just about impossible to understand the book of Hebrews or even Revelation. Remember how many times we would rely on Old Testament prophecies to understand what John was saying in his imagery? Well, I think we could get a better understanding of Revelation than Hebrews without the Old Testament. But again, we relied very heavily on understanding those border pieces and how they related to the bigger picture at hand, and how it all ends up pointing to the cross. There's a whole lot of the New Testament ain't going to mean anything to me if I don't know how the border piece fits, how it relates to the cross. See, after I understand how the border piece fits, and after I understand how it relates to the cross, then I can start to put the details in. Then I can kind of get down to the nitty-gritty. And you know, I am no great arbiter of Christianity. I mean, yeah, I've been through preaching school, and now I'm instructing at the same preaching school I graduated from, but you know what? There's still a whole lot of pieces missing in my puzzle of the Bible when I study it. But what I have found is that putting the border in place enables me to go and put all the other pieces in and understand where things fit. Jesus says, is the old law purposeless? No. It brought Christ to us. Now that it brought Christ to us, is it purposeless? No, because it was our schoolmaster. It taught us about Christ and why we need Christ. And we, in the age of Christ, can go back and still learn about and be reminded of why it's so great to have Jesus and not be under the old law, even though it was perfect for its purpose. The writer in Galatians continues. In Galatians chapter 3, verse 29, he says, and if ye be Christ's, then are ye Abraham's seed, and heirs according to the promise. Now I say that the heir, as long as he is a child, differeth nothing from a servant, though he be lord of all, but is under tutors, governors, until the time appointed of the father. Even so we, when we were children, were in bondage, under the elements of the world. But when the fullness of time was come, God sent forth his Son, made of a woman, made under the law, to redeem them that were under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons. And because ye are sons, God hath sent forth the Spirit of his Son into your hearts, crying, Abba, Father. Wherefore, thou art no more a servant, but a son, and if a son, then an heir of God through Christ. How did this sonship and this adoption come about? Through the old law. That's how we got Christ. He says, you're Abram's seed. I don't know my lineage. I could probably guarantee you that, you know, my lineage does not go straight back to Abram. But he says, if you're a Christian, you're of Abram's seed. And so when we go in the Old Testament and we see all these promises concerning Abram's seed, we say, oh, as a Christian, in some way, that also applies to me. But then he says, when the fullness of time was come. He says, at the right time, in the right place, that's when Jesus came. That's when all of these things occurred. And if you don't have the border pieces, you won't fully understand why that was the fullness of time. Why God waited until that moment. Didn't bring Jesus earlier, but he brought Jesus at that moment. Didn't bring Jesus any later, but he brought Jesus at that very moment. So, when we look at a book of the Bible, the point is not to specialize in a specific chapter or specialize in a specific character or concept or topic in that book that we really enjoy. What God intends for us to do is to look at that book as a whole and figure out what is the main point that the writer was trying to get across. Because with every single book, there is one main point. There are many minor points, but there is always one main point that the writer is attempting to get across. Hebrews, Jesus is better. Revelation, victory through overcoming. And you know, you may word the main point differently than I do. That's how I've remembered them myself. But if you know that, and when it first clicked for me in Hebrews, Hebrews before I went to school preaching, that was, for me, that was like the most difficult book. It was just such a mystery because I didn't understand my Old Testament. And then I had that class, and the teacher did a magnificent job of pulling things out, showing how it fit together, but more than anything else, he stressed. This section here shows us again how Jesus is better. You see this next section? This again shows us how Jesus is better. And this next section, it shows us the same thing. And the next one, and so when I went back, all I kept in mind is Jesus is better. And if I keep that in mind, I can read it and I can understand it so much better. Revelation, if we understand victory through overcoming, we'll get the main point of the book. We'll be able to see how things fit together and how the nitty-gritty, if you will, applies to me as a Christian. Because someone may say, well, wait a minute. Let's just say with Hebrews. I wasn't born a Jew. And I'm not, you know, a Jewish convert to Christianity thinking about going back into Judaism. What does that letter mean for me? Well, we serve Jesus. And we saw this morning how it can encourage us because he's the captain of our salvation and how that can help us along. Someone says, I'm not living 2,000 years ago with the seven churches. Rome isn't going to persecute me. Ah, but the same principles apply. And if I understand that idea of victory through overcoming, I can take that. I can see how it relates to the cross, and then I can see how it relates to me. And we could take that same idea and do it over and over again. Well, you know, I'm not a Jew living back in Jesus' day, and so Matthew doesn't have to prove anything to me that Jesus came through the lineage of David and of Abram. Ah, but it can give me faith to know that God fulfills his promises, and when God says he's going to do something, he's going to do it, and God can shift things around in a way that he makes sure that it happens. See, understanding or putting the border in first and understanding that it all surrounds the cross in one way or another, it always gets back to Jesus. We can get something out of every book of the Bible if we're willing to look at the broad picture first before we kind of dig into the more, you know, the specifics. We continue here in Galatians, and he says in verse 8 of chapter 4, he says, but now, or howbeit then, when ye knew not God, ye did service unto them which by nature are no gods. But now, after that ye have known God, or rather are known of God, how turn ye again to the weak and beggarly elements, whereunto ye desire again to be in bondage? Ye observe days and months and times and years. I am afraid of you, or that is, I am afraid for you, lest I have bestowed upon you labor in vain. He says, I hope that I have not taught you in vain, because you should understand that everything surrounds the cross. You should understand that the law is our schoolmaster. They, if anyone else, they knew the law. They should have got these things. It should have come to them almost naturally. He says, I hope I didn't teach you in vain. But you seem to be going off to gods who are no gods, and why? You should know better. See, we will struggle in our Christianity if we can't put the border together, if we don't have a good understanding of how all the books of the Bible relate to one another, and then therefore relate to Christ, and then therefore relate to me. And if we don't understand that, like I said, we can get to heaven. We're going to have greater struggles than we would have had, because there will be great encouragements that are there. God has already, they were there before we were born, but we've never taken advantage of them. Because maybe we have trained our brains to not be able to look at the broad theme at hand. Or maybe we just really never thought about doing that. We just kind of read a section and, oh, it's the end of that chapter. Well, we forget what was in that chapter and we move on to the next, forgetting that God didn't put the chapter and verse breaks in there. They've only been in the Bible for maybe 600-700 years, if that. So, you know, when Paul and them read their Bible, they didn't have those chapter breaks. They didn't have that advantage we do of reference. But they also didn't have that disadvantage of allowing the chapter verse breakup to kind of get in our way and keep us from seeing the broad picture as a whole. So the big picture of the Bible. Here's the big picture in my estimation from studying the Bible. The big picture is this, is that the Bible's main theme is redemption. It's that simple. That's why I say it's all about Jesus. What did Jesus come here to do? Redeem us from our sins. So everything in the Bible, one way or another, relates to redemption. We absolutely cannot understand the whole Bible message if we ignore that. So when we're looking at the Bible, any book, we always keep in mind, somehow or another, this relates to redemption. Then we say, well, how does this relate to the cross? And how does this relate to me? And we keep asking ourselves these questions, and it'll come together. It may take a little longer for some, but eventually it will come together. And here's the basic threefold breakdown of how the Bible, if you want a very oversimplified border for the Bible, the Old Testament in broad is that Christ will come. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are that Christ has come. And Acts through Revelation is that Christ will come again. So when we're in the Old Testament, we have to keep thinking to ourselves, all right, Christ will come. If I was living in this day and in that day and I received that message, Christ will come. How can this fit? And then we look at those four books that chronicle the life of Christ. The idea there is He has come. And then for all of the letters that were written specifically to Christians, the idea is that Christ has come and He will come again. That's the small, sort of simple border. And you can see how without the Old Testament, the New Testament doesn't make a lot of sense. You say, Christ has come. They say, who's that? The Redeemer is here. The what? The Messiah has come. Who? He's of the seed line of David. Who? It doesn't make a lot of sense. And unfortunately, there are a lot of Christians who say that because we live in New Testament Christianity, we don't need the Old Testament. Well, you know what? We needed the Old Testament to get us to Jesus. So we still need the Old Testament now that we have Jesus. Absolutely we do. Especially when all of Jesus' arguments about why He was the Messiah and why He's worthy of our worship were based in the Old Testament. I can't know that Jesus is worthy of following and worship if I don't have that border in place for the Bible. And we can have a border for the Old Testament, a border for the New Testament. We can put those borders together. We can have a border for just a single book. We can have a border for just a single chapter. But it keeps getting bigger as we take a step back. We start with that sentence. We take a step back and we see the paragraph. Take a step back and we see the chapter. A step back and we see the book. And a step back and we see which testament it was written in. And we take a step back and then we see the whole thing. Oh, it can be complicated. It can be very difficult. But our journey to understand the Bible will be very much more simple. It will be simplified if we take a step back. Always taking a step back, trying to see how it relates to the cross and how this all works together. And that's going to be our goal on Sunday afternoons. This afternoon we're going to start in Genesis. And our goal is to see what's the main theme of Genesis. We're not going to look at all of Genesis this afternoon. But our study, I don't know how long it's going to last. But for however long it does last on Sunday afternoons, we're starting with Genesis. And our intent is to go as far as we can and try and get the whole Old Testament in. Because we want to see what the idea and theme of each book is. And then how that relates to the cross and therefore relates to me. And if we can do that, I guarantee you, the Bible will make a whole lot more sense to us. We'll be a whole lot more encouraged as Christians. We'll stop staring at those individual puzzle pieces and we'll be able to look at the puzzle as a whole and we'll start putting in pieces that we didn't even know were missing. And God will bless us richly because we have done so and we understand His Word so much better. In Galatians 5, in verse 4, He says, Christ has become of no effect unto you. Whosoever of you are justified by the law, you are fallen from grace. For we, through the Spirit, wait for the hope of righteousness by faith. For in Jesus Christ neither circumcision availeth anything, nor uncircumcision, but faith which worketh by love. Problem was they weren't looking for Jesus. They were looking for someone else. They say, He's not a physical king. We're looking for a physical king. They're looking for the wrong person. They say, well, He's not of a high estate. No, they were looking for the wrong person. They thought they were looking for the Messiah, but they weren't. When we study our Bible, we've got to look for Jesus. And in our lives, friends, we've got to look for Jesus. Because what does He say to those who were not looking for Jesus? He says, if you follow the old law, and the implication is if you follow any law but the law of Christ, and you were a Christian beforehand, you've fallen from grace. You've fallen from redemption. You're no longer in a state where God would like you to be and where you should desire, because you're no longer looking for Jesus. So ask this morning, are we looking for Jesus? Have we been looking for Jesus when we study our Bible? When we try and fit the pieces together? When we try and put the border in? Have we even bothered to put the border together? Are we looking for Jesus when we study our Bibles and outside of our Bibles? Are we looking for Jesus? Do we desire Him to be the captain of our salvation? He's there. He's built the city. He's waiting. We just need to accept Him as the captain of our salvation. And if we don't, well, that's not good for us. That's not good at all. It's encouraging to know that Jesus went through the things we've gone through and that we go through, but He did it better than us, and that He is the perfect captain of our salvation. And why we would want anyone else as the captain of our salvation, I don't know. Because when we follow anyone but Jesus, we accept that person or thing as our captain instead of Jesus. And friends, Jesus is better. So are you looking for Jesus? I hope you have been. I hope you continue to do so. I hope this has encouraged you that we can look for Jesus. And if you come on Sunday afternoons, I'm going to start to look at how we can see Jesus everywhere in the Old Testament. And the intent is to be a great encouragement to us and help us get a better grasp of the Bible as a whole and how everything does relate to Jesus. We're going to sing this song here in a moment, and the question is, are we looking for Jesus? And if not, why not? So if you're not a Christian, why not? Will you become one today? If you are and you've fallen from grace, you stop looking for Jesus. Either way, we are here. And we desire Jesus to be the captain of everyone's salvation because they have accepted Him. So have you accepted Jesus or have you not? If you have not, or you have and you are no longer accepting Him, while we sing this song, we encourage you to come forward because we'll do anything to help you as we stand and sing.